Bank and Gaza over more than 55 years of Israeli occupation and Israeli aggression against the Palestinians in the occupied Palestinian territory. So, yes, the Palestinians can do that since, as I mentioned, Palestine is a member of the UN General Assembly and also has joined the ICC. But let me also add one more thing, that the ICC has started preliminary investigation a few years ago when the ex-ICC Attorney General, Fatou Bensouda, was the Attorney General of the ICC. It opened a preliminary investigation in Israeli crimes against the Palestinians. But unfortunately, the current Attorney General of the ICC, Mr. Karim Khan, to be honest with you, he has failed to do his job as an AG of the ICC. He hasn't done what he is requested to do to investigate Israeli crimes and Israeli atrocities against the Palestinians. Let me show you the double standards of the ICC. When the ICC just issued yesterday an arrest warrant against the Russian President Vladimir Putin
because of Russian invasion
of Ukraine.
And Professor, I'm going to cut you off right there because this is another issue we want to discuss in depth, and the double standards of ICC itself is a whole different story. But before we get into the ICC itself and how it is going to carry out this whole investigation, let's talk more about Palestinians and, of course, the Israeli regime. You did mention that Palestinians are a member of the UN General Assembly. They are a member of the ICC, and it is completely the legal pathways, actually, are open there for the Palestinians. But Israel is not a member of the ICC. How does this work out?
Well, it's true that Israel has not signed the Rome Statute that established the ICC. Israel is not a member of the ICC, just like Russia that is not a member of the ICC. But Israel being not being a member of the ICC doesn't mean that Israel can escape legal prosecution by the ICC. Since Israel has committed, according to the ICC and according to many international organizations like Human Rights Watch and Amnesty International, who have basically indicated in many of their reports that Israel has committed war crimes against the Palestinians, especially in the Israeli aggression against Gaza in 2021, in May of 2021. In addition to that, Israeli settlement activity in the Palestinian territory is classified as a war crime that is in contradiction of the Fourth Geneva Convention. So what I'm trying to say to you is that, yes, Israel is not a member of the ICC, but that's still Israeli officials or Israeli military commanders will be subjected to ICC prosecution, and Israel cannot escape its responsibility for not being a member of the ICC.
Okay, so our guest from Vancouver, in your opinion, if the ICC does issue a ruling, how likely is that ruling to be implemented?
It will not be implemented. It will just carry a sentimental value. I'm not saying it's not important. It's absolutely important for Palestinians to expose Israeli war crimes, to have this on record, because it's part of the history of the Palestinian struggle. But the problem with this is that the Palestinian Authority is counting on this as the only strategy it has. And the resistance should not fall into this. The resistance strategy should include its political, diplomatic, and popular work. But at the end of the day, what force occupiers and colonizers to end their project is power. It's resistance. It's an actual turning the occupation into a losing project. And the other problem is that the Palestinians have been members of the United Nations, represented by the PLO since 1974, and the PLO as a legitimate representative body of the Palestinian people officially. and Palestinians were playing a much more political and effective role in the United Nations and on international level when they were representing a Palestinian liberation movement and not merely a Palestinian state, almost like a decorative position than a real position. We know, for example, that Israel is the only nuclear power in the Middle East, yet no one investigates Israel. Why? Because Israel is not a signatory of the Rome Pact, but because Israel enjoy the covers and the political back and support of the United States, particularly United States and Western powers. So, yes, Palestinians might achieve a symbolic victory here and there in terms of international, you know, agencies, but it's not really, it should not be, a strategy for us in terms of the liberation process.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Professor was also discussing the double standards of the ICC. So, Professor, back to that topic. You just mentioned that the ICC has issued an arrest warrant for Putin, and you were talking about the double standards of the ICC. Let's talk more about that, and with respect to Palestinians, how likely is it for us to see a similar reaction from the ICC?
Members of the ICC are 132 countries out of 194 countries. So not all members of the UN General Assembly are members or signatory to the Rome Statute. Only 132 countries are members or has joined the ICC. Speaking of the ICC double standards, the international community in general and the ICC in particular, As I was trying to say, Palestine has joined the ICC in 2016, and the Palestinian leadership and the Palestinian state has requested the ICC to investigate Israeli crimes and Israeli crimes against humanity and war crimes, and also the crime of aggression against the Palestinian people in terms of Israeli settlement activity in the occupied Palestinian territory, and also crimes against Palestinian civilians, whether in Gaza or in the West Bank. And unfortunately, the ICC has failed until now to investigate seriously Israeli crimes. And Israel has said that it will not allow ICC investigators to enter the Palestinian occupied territory, since it's under Israeli control. But at least the ICC can enter the Gaza Strip from the Egyptian territory, where Israel has no control whatsoever on the border between Gaza and Egypt. So that is one case where ICC prosecutor and IC investigators can come to the Gaza Strip and investigate Israeli crimes in the Gaza Strip. But also what I was trying to say that within a year, the ICC has moved in a very speedy way to investigate crimes against humanity and war crimes in Ukraine in only 1 year. But it has failed for the past 7 years to investigate in a very serious way Israeli crimes. And as we just saw, the ICC issued an arrest warrant against Russian President Vladimir Putin, and no arrest warrant has been issued by the ICC against any Israeli official or against any Israeli army commanders. While, as I just mentioned, that many international organizations like Amnesty International and Human Rights Watch, and also a special committee that was established by the UN Human Rights Council to investigate Israeli war crimes against Palestinian civilians in the Great March of Return of 2018 and 2019, where the head of that commission issued a statement that what happened basically account to war crimes. But in spite of all of the in spite of all of that, which is on the record, in spite of all the documents which has been provided by Palestinian human rights groups and international human rights groups to the ICC, until this moment, no arrest warrant or no serious investigation to begin with has been initiated in Israeli crimes against the Palestinian civilian population.
And as our guest in Vancouver also pointed out, well, the Israeli regime enjoys very strong support from the U.S., and we do remember investigators from the ICC trying to investigate war crimes in the occupied territories being under a lot of pressure by the U.S. government in particular to drop those investigations. So let's go back to our guest in Vancouver. Obviously, we are not going to see any kind of speedy ruling the way Professor mentioned from Gaza, like the case of Putin, for example, or we also remember Omar al-Bashir. We are not expecting that to happen, but in case we do see a ruling, how long is it going to take, in your opinion, and what is the value of this ruling? Of course, as you mentioned yourself, we're not expecting anything to be implemented based on that. The ICC does not have the power to implement its own rulings. So what are the consequences of that ruling?
Well, I think I just wanted to, I agree with the professor in terms of his analysis on Hamas' role, and that it cannot persuade this. Even Palestinian popular organizations could have a campaign to do this. It's important, in my view, more than the ruling itself, because the idea is to raise the awareness about the nature of the Zionist regime in Palestine, that it's a colonialist settler regime, and that Palestinians are fighting this colonialist project, not just Israel, but also Israel backers, particularly the United States and Western power. And we saw also that nothing, for example, was done when George Bush and Blair, committed war crimes in Iraq. Iraqis and Arabs remember very well when Madeleine Albright say that, killing 500,000 Iraqi children was worth it for oil companies. This is on record. And these warmongers have said that on record that Iraqis have been killed, not in tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, but over 1.5 million innocent people. And nothing was done. Yet we saw, yesterday how they wanted to persuade a case against Putin. And before that, as you mentioned, Omar Bashir. Palestinians in general, they support exposing Israel on every international arena as long as this is not going to require certain, conditions on them or concessions, because the Palestinian cause is very just and it always enjoy international support in terms of, United Nations and other agencies. Our problem, my final comment, is the current Palestinian leadership. It is not a trusted leadership. It is not elected by the Palestinian people. Mahmoud Abbas and his cronies in Ramallah do not represent the Palestinian people. And so we want a united Palestinian leadership by the people And we want Palestinian political bodies that is also by Palestinian people themselves. This is very important, and it gives any international campaigns by Palestinians a more credible, than the current status.
Thank you very much. It's interesting that you should mention that. Let's bring in the professor. Of course, Professor, solidarity is the name of the game for Palestinians. They need to be united. And let's not forget that as we speak in Sharm el-Sheikh, there's a meeting underway. Let's see, in your opinion, how that meeting can help the Palestinians. Will it actually lead to any kind of alleviation of the suffering of Palestinians? How many times has Israel promised not to attack Palestinians, and still it has broken its promise?
Well, that is definitely a very important issue here. Let me remind you and remind your viewers that a meeting was held in Amman, in Jordan, Aqaba, 3 weeks ago on February 26th of this year, 2023, and supposedly the goal of that meeting was to de-escalate the tension between the Palestinians and Israelis. But over the past 3 weeks, Israel has committed many crimes, many incursions into the city of Jenin and the city of Nablus, killed many Palestinian civilians and many Palestinian fighters who belong to the Lion's Den or to the Jenin Battalion. And unfortunately, Israel did not respect the commitments that were made by Israelis and Palestinians during the Aqaba meeting 3 weeks ago. And today's meeting in Sharm el-Sheikh, which also included the five parties, the U.S., Israel, Jordan, Egypt, and the Palestinian Authority, and the goal also of today's meeting is to de-escalate the tension between the Palestinians in the West Bank, Gaza, and East Jerusalem, and also the Israeli occupation. But it doesn't seem to me that Israel is willing to respect its commitment in those understandings. The Palestinian delegation who met with the Israelis with the sponsorship of the U.S. is requesting Israel to put an end to its settlement expansion in the West Bank, to also put an end to its incursions into Palestinian areas classified as Area C, where the PA has total control. And also the Palestinians are asking Israel to release around half a billion U.S. dollar, which has been confiscated by the Israeli authorities, accusing the PA of sponsoring Palestinian martyrs and Palestinians who have participated in resistance against Israel. Overall, let me say that there is a popular and factional Palestinian opposition to the Sharm el-Sheikh meeting, which was convened today, as I mentioned, between the five members, the U.S., Israel, Egypt, Jordan, and the Palestinian Authority. But let's wait and see whether those understandings will be respected by Israel or not. But I doubt it very much, because since the beginning of this year, more than 80 Palestinians have been killed and executed by the Israeli occupation forces, and Israel did not stop its settlement expansion or its appalling aggression against the Palestinian people. It seems to me that it's going to take a lot of work, a lot of effort by the U.S., Egypt, and Jordan to put pressure on Israel to respect its commitment and to alleviate the daily conditions of the 5 million Palestinians who live in West Bank, Gaza, and East Jerusalem.
And the question that remains, Professor, is even if they do, can they stop Israel? Well, I'm sorry that we have we don't have much time to continue this discussion. Obviously, we need a lot more time. Our guest from Vancouver, thank you very much, Khaled Barakat, a journalist and activist, for joining us. Also, Mukaimer Abu Sada, professor of political science from Al-Azhar University. It was great to have you on this show, and of course, we definitely need to discuss this more.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, and good night.
This is A to Z. An introduction to an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, abstaining from Muharramat in the month of Ramadan. In the name of Allah, the most gracious, the most merciful. Salamu alaikum, my dear brothers and sisters. I'm Farhad, your host. We are here to study another moral condition of acceptance of our praying by Allah in this great month, the month of Ramadan. Thanks for being with us today. As promised, today we're talking about another moral condition for acceptance of our fasting as well as our other deeds in this great month. So let's go to our main topic. It's surprising to know that according to the traditions of the Prophet and Ahlul Bayt alayhi salatu wasalam, the best deed and the greatest act of worship in this month is something that we underestimated. The greatest worship, the greatest act of worship in this great month is to refrain from forbidden things and to control ourselves to refrain from Muharramat, as we know them, religiously forbidden acts. So this means two things. The first one, it requires us, it needs to study and to know evil deeds and good deeds if we want to abstain, if we want to control ourselves from committing sins, from committing bad deeds. And also it means that we need strong observation on our deeds so that we can distinguish good from evil in order to refrain from evil acts, in order to stay away from Muharramat.
رمضان المستبين جاء بالنور المبين رمضان 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 القانتين.
Welcome back, dear brothers and sisters. You're listening to A to Z on Islamic Lifestyle, and I hope you're all on the path of Allah. So in the previous part, we understood that refraining from sins is the greatest worship in this great month, month of Ramadan. But the question is how we can make it easy to stay away from them, to stay away from evil acts, to stay away from sins in this great month. So, based on Quran and based on the narrations of Ahlul Bayt alayhi salatu wasalam, there is a simple way thought by the Prophet salawatullah alayhi wa alayhi, and that is, it's very important, it's simple, to be honest, it's simple in word, but it's maybe a little difficult in action. That is to consider our deeds every night before we sleep, and as well, watch ourselves during the day so as not to commit sins during the day. In this way, at night, when it is the time of considering and evaluating our action during the day, we can easily see what sins we have committed and ask God for His forgiveness. So, by practicing this principle, step by step, we can gain the power of intelligence for our deeds and understand what to refrain from and what to commit. I wish us to have the tawfiq to fulfill the divine principles of Ahlul Bayt alayhi salatu wasalam. Thank you for being with us. I wish you the best, and I hope me, myself, and you as well, my brothers and sisters, to make an excellent use of this great opportunity, this great month, the month of Ramadan. Thank you. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Forgive me for everything I've done in the past, when everything was going so fast, and now I just can't go on.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parsetoday.ir. Our email is english@irib.ir.
But I know that you are really loving, you are really caring. I can't realize, but you know that I will be better, that I will be stronger. You are by my side, Allah.
Life is full of choices. Choose the best option. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pereza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Aminolemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
The United Nations headquarters in Geneva once again played host to the annual Human Rights Council session on Monday, where the UN Special Rapporteur to Iran released a report on women's rights situation inside the Islamic Republic. Predictably, his views sparked major disputes with Iran's delegation over accusations of mistreatment of women in recent months following Western-backed anti-Iran riots.
Advocacy for human rights is increasingly mistaken by some states and human rights mandate holders for their unwarranted and egotistic purposes, abusing the human rights mechanisms to single out and target those nations with independent foreign policy is void of any added value for protection of human rights.
As the envoys battled it out, two Iranian onlookers had a very real story of abuse, which had been largely ignored until now. Manager Safiyari and Elham Jalizavi, two Iranian nationals who suffered horrifically following terrorist attacks on Iranian soil. The culprits, notorious anti-Iran terrorist group the MKO, an obscure cult organization which currently receives significant Western support and even maintains a presence at the UN itself via NGOs.
By providing them asylum, Western countries violated the 1951 Convention, enabling them to carry on all their human rights violations, which has in turn led to our rights being violated.
Safiyari was left wheelchair-bound at 17 after an MKO bomb attack targeted a market in 1985. Jalizavi was just 15 when her father was killed in their home by an MKO mortar attack in 1991. These are just two examples of the countless Iranian victims of MKO aggression. With the help of a sympathetic non-governmental organization, the Association for Defending Victims of Terrorism, their calls for justice have now reached the heart of the UN.
The MKO are a cult who commit these acts. Their members have been duped into cooperating with them. They've also been brainwashed. Their families, too, have suffered as a result. They, too, have fallen victim to the MKO.
They should be tried in court, not allowed to come here and claim innocence. We have even filed a lawsuit with French courts because many members live in France. But unfortunately, the courts voted in their favour.
Despite past recognition of the MKO as terrorist organisation in the Western world, the US and its allies have performed a U-turn, now promoting them as legitimate opposition to the Islamic Republic, despite their many crimes against Iranian civilians.
The relationship between the Islamic Republic and the United Nations have gone through strained times, but it seems as if the UN is seemingly happy to continue providing a platform for anti-Iran terrorist organizations such as this. And as long as they do, it'll be hard to believe that ordinary Iranians will ever be able to fully trust this international institution. Robert Carter, Geneva.
Destination following his re-election.
This is in line with historical logic because we are each other's largest neighboring powers. We are also all-round strategic partners.
This is the 40th meeting between Putin and Xi during their presidency, which indicates the high and close level of cooperation between China and Russia for a long time. President Xi arrived in Moscow on March 24 for a three-day visit. He began his visit with an informal meeting with Vladimir Putin, which lasted almost 5 hours. On Tuesday, the head of state held an official meeting at the Grand Kremlin Palace. The priority in relations between Russia and China is trade and economic cooperation. In the documents signed by the two leaders, they vowed to multiply the volume of trade. It is expected that the Russian Federation and China will exceed the historical record trade volume of $200 billion this year. On February 24th, on the anniversary of the start of the Russian military operation in Ukraine, the Chinese Foreign Ministry presented a 12-point plan to resolve the conflict in Ukraine.
We believe that many of the provisions of the peace plan put forward by China are consonant with Russian approaches and can be taken as the basis for a peaceful settlement when they are ready for it in the West and in Kiev. However, so far we have not observed such readiness on their part.
China and Russia, as permanent members of the UN Security Council, also vowed to uphold the fundamental norms of international relations and build up constructive force for the formation of a multipolar world.
As for sending military equipment and weapons, military cooperation, China is unlikely to take drastic steps. First of all, China acts based on its own interests, not forgetting that relations with the Western world do not become bad. Otherwise, China itself faces sanctions. Its main trading partners are still in the West.
Putin and Xi Jinping also signed two joint documents setting long-term goals until 2030 across all tracks, a statement on plans for economic cooperation and a statement on plans to deepen partnership.
The Chinese president's three-day visit to Russia demonstrates the close historical relations between Beijing and Moscow. Any agreement made during Xi's trip can be regarded as a milestone given the fact that a new world order is being shaped. Марина Картунова, Москва.
Black community leaders demanding immediate action to reform Britain's largest police force, coinciding with an official report into the Metropolitan Police by victims' rights and social welfare expert. It was exactly that failure that prompted the report. In March 2021, Wayne Cousins, a serving Metropolitan Police officer, abducted, tortured, raped, and killed Sarah Everard. Cousins was jailed for life. His conviction prompted another woman to come forward, accusing another officer, David Carrick, convicted of raping 12 victims over 17 years. Police Commissioner Mark Rowley has welcomed the report, but stopped short of admitting the force he leads is institutionally racist.
We have racist, misogynist, and homophobes in the organization, and it's not just about individuals. We have systemic failings, management failings, and cultural failings. The reason, and I respect Louise using that term, the reason I don't use it, I think it's a very ambiguous term.
On the whole, the report is condemning of this big organization, pointing to the fact that it has lost public confidence and consent, and that it has to wake up, own up to the problems plaguing it, and engage in wholesale across-the-board reforms.
Black community leaders, though, say they're concerned the reform may not go far enough.
This is just another report saying the same thing that's been said for decades now in this here country. The Metropolitan Police is institutionally racist. Policing is harmful. It's misogynistic. It is homophobic. And for me, as a black woman, the police, the Met Police, is an anti-black organization, anti-black racism organization.
In February, the charity inquest found that black people are 7 times more likely than white people.
Black people are 5 times more likely to be tasered than white people. You could go on and on and on.
The report is a wake-up call for the Metropolitan Police. Its author, as do these minority community leaders, says her recommendations are not to be picked from, but to be implemented. Without them, she says, the force may need to be disbanded. Site Pura's up, London.
On Monday, head of Iran's Strategic Council on Foreign Relations, Kamal Karazi, met Syria's Foreign Minister Faisal al-Maqdad in Damascus and discussed regional and international developments, renewing Tehran's support for the Syrian people, army, and government. Karazi then delivered a lecture at Al-Assad Library. He said the Ukrainian conflict will lead to a new world order. He noted that the U.S. and its allies failed in their campaign to defeat Syria, asserting their intervention killed millions of people and spread extremism. Karazi said the West was willing to reconcile with President Assad if Syria had cut relations with Iran, hailing the joint policy of resistance between Damascus and Tehran.
The power of a country is expressed by its capabilities and steadfastness against pressures. This fact has been interpreted by the policy of resistance adopted by Iran and Syria across half of a century. This sparked hostilities from Israel and the West. The joint Syrian-Iranian experience proves that the main factor behind power is being able to resist international hegemony and confront arrogant world powers' greedy policies.
It's difficult today to find a state that shares similar policies with Syria. The common point that brings Syria and Iran together is supporting Palestine. Syria and Iran almost share identical viewpoints in all subjects.
Karazi clarified that the Iranian diplomacy is aimed at enhancing Iran's national security and defense capabilities. He stressed that Iran did not make the mistake made by regional countries of being reliant in their security on others. On the recent Iranian-Saudi talks, Karazi stressed that dialogue is capable of solving all problems without any foreign intervention.
Iran considers Saudi Arabia a big and influential country in the Islamic world. None of the two states should ignore the other. Both the states should use their capabilities to enhance regional security. Adopting cooperation and increasing dialogue instead of confrontation will end all crises without any foreign intervention.
The top official called for the withdrawal of illegal foreign troops from Syria. He expressed Iran's support to forming a strong government in Lebanon. He asserted that Israel's main goal is to destabilize the region, affirming Iran will continue to confront such efforts.
Iran's foreign policy has been a key boon to creation of balanced strategies to deal with regional challenges based on dialogue. Karazi reiterated during his visit that Syrian-Iranian relations have set an example of a successful alliance and resistance against U.S. and Western hegemony. Hamad Ali, Damascus.
Sound the flute, now it's mute. Merry, merrily, merrily to welcome in the year. Those were the words of William Blake, but Iranian peoples have been literally doing so more than 3,000 years prior to that 18th century poem, welcoming spring with Nowruz celebrations.
Nowruz is an ancient tradition. It literally means new day, and this is how we celebrate our new year, which begins on the first day of spring and usually falls on March 21st. Nowruz and the arrival of spring remind us that it is time for new beginnings and leaving behind our sorrows.
While many people start their New Year holidays a couple of days before Nowruz, the streets are jammed with last-minute shoppers. After all, no matter what the circumstances, you can't have a Nowruz without a half-seen table.
I personally prefer shopping for the half-seen table just a few hours before Nowruz. It's both fun and games. Aside from the Nowruz shopping that I enjoy, I also love the hustle and bustle and the festive New Year's mood in the streets.
Iranians have their own special way of welcoming spring, and one of the most prominent of these traditions is setting the half-seen table, an arrangement of seven symbolic items that start with the sound S in Farsi, representing regrowth, health, and prosperity.
There are also other things we do to welcome spring, including a major spring cleaning of our homes, shopping for new clothes, and most importantly, visiting one another, short visits that are usually reciprocated.
The Nowruz festive events culminate in Sizdebedar, the 13th day of the new year, which is also the last day of the Nowruz holidays. It is traditionally spent outdoors, picnicking and playing games. The holiday is also referred to as Nature Day.
Happy Nowruz, or as Iranians would say, we wish you 1,000 years better than this year. Gisumish Ahmadi, Tehran.
Afghanistan has been celebrating Nowruz, the Persian New Year, for centuries. It is usually a colorful and joyous festival, welcoming spring and a new life. but the celebration has been dampened since the Taliban's takeover in 2021 and the subsequent economic hardships. Nowruz is no longer an official holiday in Afghanistan. However, the Taliban authorities say they won't prevent people from celebrating the festival.
Our country needs working days rather than a lot of holidays. Nowruz won't be celebrated by the Islamic Emirate, nor is it an official holiday. But we won't stop people from what they do on this day either. However, we will instruct them to act by Islamic law and our values.
Despite challenges, many Afghans are determined to keep their spirits high and enjoy the Nowruz festivities. They dress up in new clothes and visit their relatives and friends. Afghan families also prepare special dishes such as hafsin, samanak, and fish. Many others plant trees and flowers to signify growth and prosperity. All in all, Afghans hope for a better year ahead, one that brings peace and joy to their war-torn country.
Nowruz is our ancestral tradition. It has been passed down to us from generation to generation. Nowruz means a new beginning, and its message is that we should let go of the past and begin a new year with new resolutions.
Nowruz brings us joy and blessing. It's reflecting the rebirth of nature and renewal of sprites. I hope God blesses this year with peace and prosperity. We look forward to witnessing the end of instability and chaos in our country.
Afghan people say they still find joy and meaning in their traditions and culture. For them, Nowruz is more than just a festival. It's a way of life that celebrates your heritage and resilience. Nowruz is a time of joy and the promise of good days to come. Wishing you a happy and prosperous new year. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
On Saturday, sit-ins were held in several countries across the world as part of a campaign aimed at denouncing the devastating effects of the sanctions imposed by the US and the European Union on Syria. The initiative, named End the Siege, has been joined by organizations based in a dozen countries, including Jordan, Palestine, Lebanon, the UK, Germany and Canada. Italy's sit-in was held in Rome in front of the Colosseum, where members of the No War Network and the U.S. Citizens for Peace and Justice denounced how U.S. and EU sanctions have devastated Syria's economy and led to immense human suffering.
Syria is greatly suffering the consequences of the criminal sanctions imposed by our governments, particularly after the earthquake that hit that country over a month ago. Frustration about being excluded from assistance is growing, and I believe it is a scandal that the EU can't act independently, but it has to always submit to the US diktat.
Demonstrators at the sit-in said that the US must leave Syria and stop profiting from Syrian oil and wheat that has exacerbated the poverty in the country. Italy and Syria once maintained a robust relationship, but in 2012, 1 year after the Syrian conflict, Rome joined its Western allies in closing its embassy in Damascus. 7 years later, in 2019, when Italy had an anti-establishment government under the leadership of the Five Star Movement and the Northern League, it appeared that Rome was mulling over normalizing relations with Damascus and reopening its embassy there. However, something went wrong.
It happened that the then government was under enormous pressure, particularly by the United States. Everybody knows that Italy is a country with limited sovereignty. Washington demanded Rome to stop liaising with Damascus the same way it has forced Italy to join the war in Ukraine. One third of Syria is today occupied by American soldiers, and the U.S.'s thefts of Syrian oil, natural gas, and other mineral resources have led to energy shortages.
We're here today to do, because this is the 20th anniversary of the invasion and occupation of Iraq by United States troops. They still have a NATO contingent. 1,000 Italian troops are leading the contingent to rob the oil from northeast Iraq, impoverish the Iraqis, and send the oil to Turkey, Israel, and clients of the United States.
The February 6 earthquake has further worsened the already deteriorating economy and humanitarian situation in Syria. According to UN sources, even before the earthquake tragedy, 70% of the population needed humanitarian assistance due to the war in the country and the US-EU sanctions. Max Civili, Rome.
Syrian President Bashar al-Assad received heads of Arab political parties who arrived in Damascus to hold an emergency meeting of the General Conference of Arab Parties. Assad said there is currently an opportunity for political parties to take action in resisting the siege imposed on the countries they represent, underlining the importance of dialogue in expanding the conference to include various political movements and forces. Head of the conference, Qasem Saleh, expressed solidarity with Syrians affected by the earthquakes. Members of the delegation called for ending the occupation of Syrian lands, lifting the U.S. economic siege, and activating joint Arab action.
We can wait to President Assad our stances and listen to his advices for activating joint Arab action and the role of youth. We are betting on the youth at this stage for finding creative solutions for political, economic, and social challenges.
Representatives of parties then held the 63rd emergency meeting of the General Conference of Arab Parties. They underlined the importance of respecting Syria's sovereignty and unity and rejected unilateral economic sanctions on Syria. They asserted that resistance blocked the implementation of a colonialist plot in the region that aimed at eliminating the Palestinian cause and defeating Syria.
We unconditionally stand with Syrian people, army, and leadership, which paid a heavy price to defend just Arab causes. Syria is the source of our history and civilizations. Arab states should return to Syria.
What happens in Syria affects Lebanon and vice versa. We entered into Syria at a particular time in support of its leadership, army, and people. We came to Syria to defend Lebanon. If Syria had collapsed, the whole region would have collapsed. Even Iran's support to Syria was aimed at defending Iran because Syria was the first defense line of all resistance forces in the region.
Participants rejected all forms of normalization with Israel. They welcomed the restoration of diplomatic relations between Iran and Saudi Arabia, underlining it would greatly contribute to solving regional problems. The conference is being held at a time Syrians are extremely suffering from the repercussions of a foreign-backed conflict, unilateral sanctions, and most recently, the devastating earthquake. It's a wake-up call to the international community to take urgent actions and help resolve Syria's dilemmas. Hamad Ali, Damascus.
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked
The Holy Prophet of Islam is the example
of
Self-purification is the most significant factor.
Imamat yek asle zinde ast dar tarikh Islam.
Imamat is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, Assalamu alaikum to you dear listeners of iRib English Radio Call of Islam page. Welcome to another episode of the program Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short Farsi speech by Hujjatul Islam Mandegari. Stay tuned.
Thank you.
Being good and pious is a difficult task. It is difficult to do good to a person and get negative answers. It is difficult to be good to others while others backbite you. It is really difficult to be loyal to others while others betray you. These cases make being good a difficult task. Controlling anger is also difficult, but Allah ordered all of us to control our carnal souls more in the month of Ramadan. Fasting, praying, giving zakat and other obligations of Allah might seem difficult at the first glance. The holy month of Ramadan is the best chance to make difficult tasks easy for ourselves and to be more patient in difficult occasions. The holy month of Ramadan makes the most difficult tasks as sweet as honey for us. This way, we can keep the spirit of Ramadan alive in the other months of the year too. Thank you very much, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio Call of Islam page, for listening to this episode of the program Ulema's Speech, which was the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Mandegari. To find out more about this program, log on to our website, parstoday.ir, Call of Islam page. We leave you in Allah's care and goodbye.
In the limelight.
The far-right National Rally Party has tabled a motion of no confidence in the French government after it used Clause 49.3 of the Constitution to force through controversial pension reforms in the French Parliament on Thursday, 16th of March. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The British newspaper The Guardian has covered this story and tells us more. The French government faced a no-confidence vote on Monday, 20th of March, as MPs said they feared for their safety. Strike action intensified and police banned demonstrators from parts of central Paris after President Emmanuel Macron's decision to push through an unpopular rise in the pension age without a vote in the French Parliament. Opposition politicians have filed two no-confidence motions in protest at the government using controversial executive powers to raise the state pension age in France from 62 to 64. The French President Emmanuel Macron decided last week that the government should use Article 49.3 of the Constitution to bypass Parliament because he feared it could not garner enough votes for the pension changes. After 2 months of protests against the pension changes and on-off strikes headed by a rare unified front of all trade unions, anger continued to mount during the weekend, with demonstrators in many French towns and cities. More rail, air and school strikes are planned over the next week. The two no-confidence motions are seen as unlikely to pass, as they would require an unprecedented grouping together of all the warring opposition parties in the French Parliament. There would have to be a united front across the political spectrum, from the radical left to Marine Le Pen's far right and Nicolas Sarkozy's right-wing Les Républicains, in order to meet the high threshold of an absolute majority of 287 votes. One motion was proposed by the centrist group LIO as a kind of multi-party no-confidence motion co-signed by the NUP alliance of parties on the left. Another no-confidence motion has been proposed by Marine Le Pen's far-right National Rally Party, which has 88 MPs in the French Parliament. The only way a no-confidence vote would pass would be with the support of a large number of MPs from Les Républicains. But the party's leader, Eric Ciotti, has ordered his MPs not to vote against the government on the grounds that it could lead to chaos. Eric Ciotti's constituency office in the southern French city of Nice was ransacked at the weekend. Windows were broken and graffiti on the walls threatened riots unless he supported the no-confidence vote in the French government. "They want through violence to put pressure on my vote on Monday. I will never yield to the new disciples of the terror," Ciotti wrote on Twitter. Other MPs from Les Républicains party said they were receiving hundreds of threatening emails every day. "It is as if tomorrow they want to decapitate us," said Frédéric Mounier from the Corrèze, telling BFM TV that the emails politicians were receiving amounted to harassment. The constituency offices of MPs from Emmanuel Macron's centrist political party, Renaissance, were also vandalised. An opinion poll in the Journal du Dimanche on Sunday showed Emmanuel Macron's popularity has dropped to its lowest level since the Gilets Jaunes anti-government protests 4 years ago. As police brace for a week of unpredictable, spontaneous protests in cities and small towns across France, the mood of anger was likened to the start of the Gilets Jaunes protests, when demonstrators in small towns and the countryside congregated on roundabouts and at street protests. The protests were initially against fuel tax rises, but evolved to encompass a wider lack of trust in the French political system. Euronews has also covered this story and tells us more. The far-right National Rally Party has tabled a motion of no confidence in the French government after it used Clause 49.3 of the French Constitution to force through controversial pension reforms in the Parliament on Thursday, 16th of March. The National Rally's deputies tabled the vote in the National Assembly, the lower house of the French Parliament, on Friday afternoon. "And we will vote on all motions of censure presented," said MP Laure Lavalette. "What matters is that this inequitous reform project falls," insists Ms. Lavalette. In its motion of censure, the group of 88 National Rally deputies castigates an unfair and unnecessary reform. While the French people massively demonstrate their opposition to this reform, the national representation has not at any time been able to vote on this text, which is, despite the legality of the process, a serious breach of democratic principles, it denounced. French President Emmanuel Macron invoked a constitutional clause